days, there's so much going on around us, this time in history and the state of the planet, and there are multiple points of view swirling in the form of input that we seek and some that seeks us. Mix that into the usual changes and transitions in our individual lives. It's a perfect storm of stress and anxiety on a daily basis.
That is so, so true. We're very glad to be talking about this at this time in our lives, in our history. Hello, everyone. This is Bebe Peters.
And I'm Andrea Gould Marks, and you're listening to Boom Talk.
Well, we've been exploring uncertainty among ourselves and in our community for quite some time now. And actually, in our last podcast, we interviewed a lovely guest and opened the conversation right there.
And as we continue to pay attention to it, the theme tends to deepen. Just like last week, we made it our central theme in the meeting of the Network of Extraordinary Women.
Wasn't that fun? I really liked that meeting.
It was good to talk about it in a group like that.
It is. And doesn't it feel like uncertainty, and I mean that uncertainty all in caps, tends to occupy our thoughts on so many levels, especially in our current political and global environments? It seems to me that there tends to be an agreement about the presence of uncertainty almost everywhere. Kind of like my experience with plantar fasciitis. Who knew that uncertainty and fasciitis were such common things to so many people in their lives?
Yeah, people wondering, what the hell is this now? Yeah. I feel like it's a force that's asking us to do something or take some kind of action. That feeling of doubt goes hand in hand with the feeling of uncertainty and feeling pressured to do something, but what? So the question is, I guess, how do we cope with that feeling of anxiety that lies underneath uncertainty? How about it, Bebe? Let's have that.
Yeah, and you know what's so interesting to me is that I've just done some reading that uncertainty appears to be even larger in a larger scale among younger people. Like children are showing signs of distress, especially teens and tweens.
I don't think any age group is immune to the effects of just not feeling settled. We're on shaky ground.
Well, we are certainly not feeling settled. And aside from feeling insecure, we're very much interested in diving into the idea of how uncertainty could be an opportunity for us and what it does to our brains.
Yeah, right. So we're used to thinking that. And we know that uncertainty definitely causes unrest inside us. And usually when we perceive or believe that we don't have any control over the matter, they're connected. And also a feeling of powerlessness, however momentary. And what if we feel like we can and at least influence a situation? Then we have faith in ourselves or our ability, but it's based on past success. So when we can't affect a situation, it feels like that old movie Speed. Who was in that? I only But where someone took over the bus, whatever the bus was, and the bus is just going really fast, and the rest of us are just along for the ride. That's the worst feeling.
Yes. And to feel like we have no say in the matter, it's stifling at times. We have no ability to affect what's happening. So all we can change is ourselves, right?
Yeah, ourselves, absolutely. And I think that relates really to that aspect of uncertainty that's growing even more and more global. And now with this international minute-to-minute communication, events that were previously far away or happened years ago, they're at our eyes and ears immediately, even demanding our attention. And in our own country, we're in the election year, and planet-wise, we're aware that the climate is at least inconveniencing us, changing the airline industry, oh my God, you know, unreliable.
I know. It's like every day or every week, some news about the airline industry is coming to our attention. And yet, out of our control, we can't make things better ourselves. So all of that, which is unsettled or threatening outside of us, mixes into our private lives. And once again, voila, a feeling of existential insecurity and angst. The opposite of a peaceful heart that I'm seeking all the time.
True. The peaceful heart you seek. Yes.
So, Dr. Andrea, how do we navigate that which is out of our control on the grand scale, while the private insecurity is operating within us at the same time?
Now, I think the masters would talk about sharpening up our ability to work with ourselves, you know, taking responsibility for knowing how to calm ourselves, and certainly to remain in as fertile and generative state as we can, so that we can create internal adjustments to our own beliefs and perceptions about what we can control. That's what we speak of, and let go of what we can't control. That's an art in itself, letting go of what we can't control. So I'd say let's start with what we can do to create our greatest care, which is self-care. Mm-hmm. You know, tuning up our bodies with good nutrition and viable exercise. And here's where learning meditation or using one of those apps available on our phones could help. Reaching out to friends, sometimes even just hearing the sound of a different human voice other than our own, a trustable and soothing human contact with another in any form, a cat even or a dog. And then again, the most potent, I think, that we talk about all the time, which is being in nature.
Yeah, we do. And it's about finding, I think for you and me, it's about finding that space where we can focus on serenity. So it's kind of like giving ourselves permission and power. And I love those two words, to focus is really so much healthier than being pulled in so many different directions that we cannot even participate in, let alone have any control over.
Yeah. So taking care of our own selves organically, as we become aware of how we feel physically in our bodies, as well as socially, especially in the way we communicate with others, we certainly don't want to become part of the problem, for instance, of polarization, for example, right? We want to be able to deal with the differences that exist, because there's no real consensus right now. And forcing issues is just not working out.
No.
Like sometimes we can feel like there isn't anywhere that we can tuck ourselves in with any guarantee of security.
Yes, right. And I know you've always talked about journaling, how writing out our thoughts and feelings can actually relieve us from the immediacy of needing to take action, if not outright lead to creative thought. So let's spend a little bit of time to devote a little more of our time to the writing of what is triggering us about these global, monumental, massive things that are affecting us. We can just identify that they're there, taking up space in our minds and hearts.
And, you know, sometimes it's my experience anyway, that when we reread after we got everything out, when we reread our journals, we see that our words wind up sometimes with a seed of a thought that develops into some kind of helpful idea, or concretely, maybe many times a letter to the editor, whoever the editor of this world is, or maybe sometimes a well-expressed sentiment to a friend.
Yes, or even an opinion, you know, that we can share without expecting immediate change or action. So for that, of course, we need someone that would listen to our opinion, and that's always good. But we can do that rather than contributing to the larger conversation in respectful ways.
Or we can do both. We can share without expecting an immediate change. And maybe that in itself can contribute in a respectful way to a larger conversation.
Yes.
You know, or now for a little fantasy, we can become spokespeople. We can participate in local processes that'll have more impact. But I think the main importance is getting our feelings out on paper for our own sense, our own feeling of stabilization. At least we can see in that moment where we're standing. It's like, you know, I always think of journaling as a tool for relieving ourselves of carrying some kind of unexpressed burden. And they can make us, carrying those burdens inside can make us feel hemmed in, not okay.
And it's really so clarifying to feel that we've said what we have needed to say. We were able to get it off our chest, right? Yeah. That's where that expression comes. And while you, Dr. Andrea, have been journaling for decades, you're recommended highly to all your clients, it seems to me that journaling is today being accepted as being a most valuable tool. Like just the other day, I heard on NPR, they had an entire program on the value of journaling. A psychologist and a psychology professor discussed this very relevant tool for our life. Well, so what you've been talking about all these years, people are talking about it now and again.
Well, when we've identified the things that are pulling at us, and I guess, you know, I just trained myself to be as clear as possible every day. I used to call the name of the page Mind Dump, and there would be a list of random things that were on my mind, from everything from taking out the trash, you know, to cleaning the kitty litter, to going fruit shopping for very specific things, and then all the global concerns and all the other small worries with a small W and with a big W. So once we identify those things that are pulling at us, maybe unconsciously, maybe subconsciously, we can be as clear as we can possibly be. And I think it's a good state for our mind. And then our body can feel a little bit steadier. So we can identify what's going on under the surface. We don't take it out on other people.
Right. That's right. Okay, then let's take a peek at what uncertainty can deliver to us right now if we allow ourselves, you and me, and everyone around us to see it in a different light or from a different perspective. Sometimes using different words can help that kind of a shift.
Yeah, we do that in our conversations, just like, you know, that just rolls off our tongues, different word, different feeling.
Exactly. And it's like asking ourselves a question about how curiosity, rather than thinking, can open up new ways of dealing with a challenge we may be facing.
Yeah, like if we say, okay, I feel uncertain now. Now, that's not necessarily negative, because it can lead to being more creative, but we have to say, I'm curious about this feeling of overwhelm. I'm curious about it. Just saying I'm curious about it allows there to be more options, which I'm always after more options, than just feeling trapped in a thought. Then maybe even, right, more courageous, because we're experimenting with designing the actions that we might want to take. That experimenting is another very big one. We don't have to commit to everything. And then we could see maybe there are possibilities where the gloom has been living.
I love that so much. I love that so much, to let go of the gloom where it's living. That's just the best for me.
Yeah, possibilities. Like maybe they're like little lightning buds that, you know, that kind of light up the space so that it's not as gloomy. There are possibilities that might frighten us, and there are some that could embolden us, maybe things we haven't really tried on before. We've even written that patience and possibilities go together during a time not long ago when everything seemed resolved, like the pandemic.
Yes, yes. And during the pandemic, right, particularly like if you recall the early stages, we made a little bit of a connection between the anxiety that comes with uncertainty and the ability that we do have to be more patient to see how things unfold before we start reacting. It's like breathing it in, but not taking any action.
Yeah. And so maybe we can surface the kind of possibility that could scare us, or the kind of possibility that could shed a whole new light. This episode is brought to you by Boom Talk Media. Our tiny books, which we call Relieflets, include the title Patience and Possibility. Ever wonder why simply slowing down can give you access to deeper creativity? You can learn all about it in this little booklet. So visit boomtalkmedia.com or on Amazon under Patience and Possibility. Check it out, and then we'd love to hear from you. Reach us through info@boomtalkmedia.com.
In an uncertain economy and rapidly changing financial markets, AARP can help you navigate retirement, save for emergencies, and pay down debt. Learn more at aarp.org/moneymap. Paid for by AARP.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Boom Talk Media. This is Bebe Peters with my co-host and friendly psychologist, Dr. Andrea Goldmarks.
So when you think back on the assistance that you give your clients and you work with people, what would you see as the type of mindset that would allow us to move into an uncertain future with a little bit greater sense of calm and competence? What would that be?
Well, I think the first thing, if we could call it a mindset, is that one thing we can control, and that is our nervous systems. And it's a skill worth learning. You know, it's tricky. We all have our ways of doing it. I had a client who, you know, he wasn't interested in meditation, but he would get on his exercise bike and go faster and faster and faster until he said that he was in a zone. Right? So that's an example. I have another client who swears by the hot bath. And then many others, we've taught meditation. And that is extremely helpful, especially mindfulness meditation, because the key of it is that we're identifying when our minds go off the track and we can bring ourselves back. That's the power that comes from meditation. And, it's very useful because we do get caught like in a web. And unless we see that we're in a web, unless we have the training to come back all the time, bring ourselves back, basically say to ourselves, come back, pay attention to the breath, we can be lost there in that negativity or in that web of worry for a long time. Remember in the pandemic, there was a lot of discussion about this, being in nature and calming ourselves down that way. That was like the only safe place at the beginning of COVID.
Yes. Yes, because there's nobody else on our hiking path. We were basically the sole hikers, right?
And there wasn't any, there wasn't COVID outside when you're by yourself, or right. So we thought, right?
Right.
So just the walk in the forest, the walk up the mountain, even the walk in a quiet neighborhood, and just the immensity itself was soothing and still is soothing. It liberates us, I think, from our cluttered minds, right? The sense of space.
It does, absolutely. You know, just the other day, I was feeling like I needed a walk, but because I have the aforementioned discomfort in my foot, I took a shorter walk. I just walked around the neighborhood and was really appreciating the layout of the land, how the road was paved, or the blooms that were just opening up during this time of year, even like the color of the sky, just to bring that awareness of all of that to me inside.
Yeah. And it was like a way to get from the busyness in your mind to, you know, the outside world does have an effect on us if we allow it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can get kind of claustrophobic with our anxiety and our fears and all that we can see that we're thinking about in our brain. And the minute we're out in the world, I mean, even if it's just the immediate world, we see life in another perspective. And it is filled with options. Takes away some of the narrowness, I think, and the constraints around our thinking. There's relief in that. We're looking for relief.
We are. We are indeed. And especially now, right, in this bird mating season, their conversations are a trip and almost intrusive at times into our peace and quiet. Now it's the nesting and the singing. There's so much joyous chattering going on. It's so much fun to be part of that.
And I think that the tones of birdsong is really very soothing. If I can pull it into my nervous system, there must have been times in the past that I put on, without having birds in my house, a recording of bird sounds on my playlist. And I used to have an audio playing in my living room. And then I'd go into the office and I'd come back out, you know, for a snack or something. And the whole house would feel so much more settled, almost like my living room and kitchen were like a bird sanctuary. So I would just leave it playing. Sometimes that still works for me. And also just closing your eyes and being quiet or listening to peaceful music. And I find that if we use like a single instrument, you know, like a guitar or a Native American flute, piano, but single, not orchestral, it's really cool. And even just silence, if you can tolerate it. But again, get back to those web meditations like Calm or Headspace, others like that. You've tried them, right?
I have. And I think I'm an addict to Headspace.
Yeah.
You know, I just thinking back, I love how you've said a while back how we can live, that we can, in fact, live with the unresolved questions by allowing them to really exist as open questions, kind of put them on the back burner. I just want to like put quotes around, put them on the back burner, because it's not getting rid of them. It's not disregarding them. It's placing them in the back burner so that we can decide something down the road. While at the same time, we can give ourselves permission to let it marinate. Another one of your words, right? To marinate. You and I make soup. We marinate things. But so we let the thoughts marinate. And it doesn't have to be decided. Sometimes we put the pressure on ourselves. It doesn't have to be decided right now. Just for a while, it can be put on the back burner. And once you put it on the back burner, you don't even have to focus on it all the time, knowing that it's sort of quietly in a whisper. It's existing there and waiting for you to address it, or waiting for the answer to come up.
Yeah, it's funny how that can happen. It's a form of self-care to be able to let go of the pressure and to put the question, like you say, on the back burner. And I got that idea from a very famous quote that comes from the poet Rainer Maria Rilke. And he spoke about living the question. And just that term always spoke to me, to my patience, you know, to my patience, the quality of patience, to give ourselves the necessary space to live with it on the brain and accept that it's not the time, the time isn't right somehow to answer it, that eventually it's our lived experience that serves to enlighten us. You know, it's sometimes like being a child and worrying about what it's going to be like to be an adult, but when really just living all the way, all the years into adulthood teaches us how to deal, right? You know, so it's that kind of thing. And if you just live and walk with the question patiently, in time, a response forms. There's a trust there because there are certain things that are just not answerable, like the state of the world or how to address the most gnarly problems in our time. And we all live with those questions in our minds and have unresolved answers. So
one example, you know, that comes to mind for me is in the 1970s, many of us became aware of the changing climate and how down the road it would, in a yet unknown way at that time, become an issue for the planet, an issue that it is today. And now there's more of a collective thinking that's focusing on questions such as that. But I think also personally, for me, there is an impatience in me and all of us to want to solve something small or large right away. We want to get to the answer. We want an answer. And sometimes interpersonally, we want an answer, like as a parent or as a partner. We want to know that others have made a definite choice.
Yeah, one sweet thing, one of my clients was talking about how she wants her daughter to be clear about which college she's going to choose, and she wants to plan. And I've had this kind of situation before where a parent wants to plan and the child wants to go back to each of those to see how she feels, to gather the data, you know, from being live there. They have to live the question for a while. That's just the way it is, taking some additional time to be with it. Because sometimes, and all of us have had this experience, we hurry up and decide, and it's not necessarily the right thing. Anyway, on the other hand, we can be debating about things.
And you and I talk about that sometimes, right, we just don't have all the information, all the new information to effectively have an impact on the choice that we make. So no sense in hurrying us along to come to the answer. Just take in all the information and look at it and analyze it a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes you don't even have to look at it and analyze it. It comes flying in.
Yes.
Synchronicity or serendipity, or the next thing you know, you open your laptop the next day on your phone, and there's a whole thing there. Like you said, you know, there's a whole thing on journaling. It's like, oh, that's nice. So glad to see it's getting some press.
Yes.
Anyway.
Right. So
you were talking about holding curiosity as a value.
Yeah. And, you know, that's something that I have really grown to appreciate. You call it patient openness. You talk about an exercise that you do. I don't know if we've ever done this before, but let's try it.
Let's try it. Okay. Well, you know, the thing is, the word openness is just a word, right? Until you let it be a feeling in your body. So this is the thing that one could do sitting down. So I'm sitting here. You just need your hands for this exercise. And if you're listening, sitting down. And if you're driving, maybe not. But open your hands and place them palms down on your thighs and feel that closed feeling that, you know, it's secure. Your palms are on your thighs and you keep them down, right? And just allow a question to circulate in your mind, keeping your palms down, and ponder. Give it a minute. Now, turn your hands over so your palms are up.
Got it.
Okay. On your thighs, just open your palms and check out the difference in your feeling. The open hand, there's something about being open that you really can hold. That's a little posture of actual openness. The kinesthetic feeling in your body is very valuable. There's nothing there, or I don't know, I don't have the answer, but I'm open. And so if we mentally can walk in openness, you know, that's really a good thing. We can listen. We can sense the possibilities as they emerge. Or if they don't emerge, then, you know, that's information as well. And socially, or in conversation, or even communally, we can remain open.
Well, you know, being open, of course, allows more information and ideas to filter into our mind, right? Mm-hmm. As you were talking a little before, it relaxes our nervous system. It sort of puts it aside. I love that feeling. Yeah. I love that feeling. So you're not feeling the tingling, the irritant on your skin, which, as you know, I always feel that skin thing. Right? I want my body to feel relaxed. I want my insides to be calm. And I think this opening of the hands felt like that. And of course, it's unclenching, right? Which so often we keep the hands clenched.
Right. Sometimes if you're talking to, you know, on a one-to-one and, you know, you're literally holding on to something and listening to another person, then when you open your hands, you really are more open to the interchange that's going on. And unclenching any and all the parts of the body is useful. You know, there's a name. Of course, there's a name for everything. It's systematic or progressive relaxation. And the gist of it is that, you know, we lie down. We are in the business of identifying all the muscle groups in the body. And we're not going to do that now, but you do it with your hands. You can open them and close them, and then you could stretch them in the opposite direction. And you really work the muscles in that way. So you cause relaxation through flexion and constriction. And you do that through every muscle group, through your feet, through your calves, through your pelvis, all the way up through your chest, your neck, shoulders, head. Yoga, you know, in Savasana or before Savasana, many yoga teachers go through that whole sequence. So it is possible for us to actually relax the tension in our body. It's very doable. And if anybody wants to look it up, again, it's called progressive relaxation. Try it.
Maybe after the podcast, we can do the foot relaxation. Because as you know, that topic is high priority in my mind.
Right.
But for sure, coming at life with a relaxed expression through our body, with all of the tension in the body, which feeds the tension in our mind, we can face life with a little more relaxation.
Yeah, it gives us a sense of possibility that we can get through this time with a little less angst.
You know, uncertainty, right? Who knew that this would be, let's see,
a fertile state. Pluses. There'd be pluses to relaxation. There'd be pluses to uncertainty.
That's right. To words that we typically associate with negativity or negative impact, that there are pluses to those if we just look at it in a different way.
Yeah. And if we practice and maybe savor the uncertainty and really become friends with the uncertainty, maybe we can achieve some equanimity, meaning just, you know, not so uncomfortable all the time. We have to choose that and move in that direction in order to have our ability to take in what we haven't yet experienced. So let's send out that wish to all our people in our community and in our lives and see if we can have an open space where we can hold that space open.
Let's do that. Until next time, dear hearts.
Thank you, BB, and thank you all for listening.
This program was brought to you by Boom Talk Media. where we inspire and nurture the human journey. For more healing insights and links to our books and blogs, visit our website at boomtalkmedia.com. And join us next time.